This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Remember, folks, you can check out AMI TV content using the AMI app. Just simply subscribe to it by opening up your app store, whether you're Android or iOS user, and look for AMI. You'll find the AMI app very accessible and so much great content available to you on there by simply downloading it, and away you go. Documentaries, AMI TV shows, and digital shorts, all available to you using the AMI app, available at your Android or iOS app store. Kelly McDonald hosts the program, Ramya Muthan, my co-host. Rami, we once a month get a chance to open up the conversation in a different kind of way on our Voices segment. We look for people's thoughts at the things that they're into, the passions that they have, the drives, any comments that they might want to say about certain subjects they find very important. Today, we're welcoming in Matthew Bulmer from Puslich Township in Southern Ontario. Matthew's occupations are in agricultural product development, farming, and he's a member of the Puslich Township Council, as well as a member of the Wellington County Accessibility Advisory Committee. Matthew, welcome back to the show. No, excuse
me. Hey,
welcome to the show. We've talked so much lately, I felt like, oh no, hold on, we just had this conversation. Nice to have you on with us.
Thank you. Making me feel at home.
Well, I got to ask, because I keep thinking I'm saying Puslich wrong. Am I?
Yes.
Am I saying it right?
No.
No. Say it the way I should, please.
Well, as think about hanging cats in trees. So a puss lynch. So pussy cats lynched in trees.
Puslich. Oh, good grief. Oh, Puslich. Okay. Okay. Whoa. I'll leave it alone and let you say it for the rest.
Okay, it's Puslich. It's a common thing. We can tell. It's sort of, if you go to, when you go to Erin, is it Erin or Erin? Palmerston,
right,
or Palmerston? Arkell or Arkell? We all have these things.
I thought, well, I probably should clear that up with him, and kept meaning to ask you. Let's jump into the conversation here. As a member of council, you were invited to speak to some students in the community that were involved in a very interesting environmental leadership program. Can you tell us about this opportunity for the young people out there?
Yeah, sure. It may not be a surprise to people in Guelph, because, you know, they were the first municipality or first part of the province to elect a green member of our Ontario Parliament. But years ago in Guelph, a teacher in Guelph started a program known as the KELP program. And it stood for the Community Environment, Community and Environmental Leadership Program. And the idea of this high school program was to teach a combination of civics and environmental science to students for credit, and it was a lot of outdoor learning. So it didn't happen necessarily in the school. It'd be a semester they spent doing outdoor ed projects, learning about how systems work, learning about how government works, mm-hmm, and the interaction and the relationship between the two and how one can influence the other.
Yeah, because it's an interesting combo when you think about it. And to think that students should learn about this, for me, I thought, I was like, okay, why? But you're looking at some things that people need to understand, especially when advocating. Is that what you would think? Advocating and making these decisions that would impact, areas, farmland, future?
Yes. And I think, you know, civics can often be an abstract course to people when you're in high school. But when you connect it to something that people care about, it suddenly is no longer abstract. And when you can connect it to real change and understanding how your local government works, which is where you can actually get to know people fairly easily, it helps you see how you can make a difference, not just as a young person, but for the rest of your life when you understand how local government works.
Interesting. So there was a question that you were asked, And you want to share that with us and the effect that it had on you?
Yeah, well, when I was first elected to municipal council back in November of 2000, and my background being farming a bit, construction before that, I had taken an environmental farm plan. I'd done the environmental farm plan program when I started farming to learn more about how I could farm in a way that was, I was farming with the land rather than sort of trying to be a steward of the land in best terms. And when I got elected, I was kind of elected on the environmental side of things. I was concerned about water. I'd grown up planting trees, so I was sort of the environmental candidate. And of course, I had all the answers. And having all the answers, of course, I was asked to go and speak to this kelp program when they were doing one of their outdoor ed programs in a small community nearby called Eden Mills. They were out there for a week, and I was asked to come and speak to them. And at the end, there was questions and answers, and a young girl that grew up around the corner from me here put up her hand, and her question was, what are you doing as a municipal counselor to deal with greenhouse gas emissions? Well, suddenly I didn't have an answer. To go from having all the answers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a lot of pressure that, you know, you have all the answers, you feel confident, but then you get asked that.
Yeah, and I thought my job was, and it really, at the local level, I mean, Whistler Township is one of a member municipality of Wellington County. So there's seven what officially called lower tier municipalities, and there's the county. In urban areas, it's a region, then you have your local city and you have your region. And for me, well, we plowed snow and put out fires and you know, maybe had a few ball diamonds. I was floored. I didn't have an answer, and I didn't know. But it made me realize how much I didn't know. And as though all of my life when I'd been planting trees, I thought of them, you know, we're planting the lungs of the planet. These things produce oxygen. I didn't think of it beyond that. And, but I was lucky at the time. I was serving on our local council. Our mayor was not so uninformed and wasn't so focused on just the here and now. He had a bigger picture of many things. And he, I guess it was about 2004 when the county was about to celebrate its 150th anniversary. He was warden of the county at the time, which is the fancy name of, you know, chair of a region. When you're that's the head of you're mayor of a city and you're warden of a county. And to celebrate, he thought it might be nice. What if we planted, well, we're 150 years, 150 trees didn't seem like enough. So he set the goal, let's do 150,000.
Wow.
And wow. Ooh. Where are you going to get 150,000 trees? And it was talking to him and working next to him that I started to see, yeah, here's something. We had a local tree program here. We had a community group, roadside heritage trees, had a little nursery. We collected a few seeds. You know, we might have planted out 20 trees a year. You know, to go from 20 trees in our little community to 150,000 across the municipality. And but they made it happen. You know, they made it happen. They pulled trees from all the conservation authority nurseries, from the provincial nurseries. And local, there was a Trees for Mapleton. Mapleton is another local municipality within the county. They had a tree program. They pulled trees from the Roadside Heritage Trees Group. And they were able to cobble together 150,000 trees to make that happen. And it was so well received, they thought, well, how do we make this a lasting impact?
Yeah.
And that's where the next thing came up was the Green Legacy Program.
Right.
And out of this one thing, they decided they wanted to have a permanent tree planting program. Because they'd understood, I don't know if you know anything about Wellington County, but the southern part were all gravel pits. The northern part, it's all prime farmland. And, you know, we've got good tree cover in the south, and Erin's got good tree cover. But you go in the north.
Right.
And they'll be lucky to have 10% tree cover.
Yeah.
And the Environment Canada was pushing for, you know, we need about 30% tree cover to get something decent if we're going to have any impact on climate change with planting trees.
Wow.
And that was just kind of the spark to get this whole thing going, the Green Legacy going.
What a plan that had to be put in place to even just know where you're going to be putting X number of trees.
Yeah, not just where to put them. It was easy. There was pull from the public to take and put the trees.
Right.
The choking point was where we're going to, if we want to do this on a regular basis and grow a program and create a lasting legacy, where are we going to get the trees on a regular basis? And that was the second big piece that fell into place. The Little family years ago had left 200 acres to the county in our municipality, close to where I grew up in the township. And it had the old farmhouse, and the Littles themselves did planting on their farm. They planted trees where they wasn't good to farm. And it was that old farmhouse they turned into the first Green Legacy nursery, where the county decided it was time for them to start growing their own trees, collect their own seeds, grow their own trees. If they wanted to really be committed to this, they had to make sure they could guarantee a supply. And that was 2005, 2006 is when that finally started to happen with its own nursery. So really something.
And you know, like the theme of it is for me now, because you've said at the beginning, right, how life can change once you start to think about things in a different way, or that question you were asked about what you're doing. So what made you think differently, Matthew, about your wood chipper?
Well, I'll tell you that, for years I'd rented a wood chipper, never thought about it. You know, every couple of years we need to do some bush clearing around the farm, keeping the bush back, pruning stuff. And a couple of years ago, I finally got my own. And we were going around, and, you know, it's got a 30 horse engine on it. You got to put gas in it. You got it. And then I'm taking it out and running wood through it. And after all these years of being involved with the Green Legacy program, with the idea of trees are a carbon sink, and hearing all of the concerns about greenhouse gases and emissions from gas, I realized, wait a second, this isn't a wood chipper, it's a carbon pump. You know, I'm pouring gasoline in one side, you know, to burn fossil fuels so I can chop up wood to release the carbon it's sequestered faster, you know? And just, it started to made me think, why wasn't there an electric version of this available? It's not a huge motor. There's lots of room. And I thought, so my carbon pump wouldn't be a carbon pump. It could be just a wood chipper. And, you know, it's funny how when you look at things differently, you see the potential for things to be different, right? I just accepted up front that this is the way it had to be.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Wow. It's amazing.
That's a good point.
If you don't mind. Yeah. But I also learned one of the things that I don't know if I didn't mention about the Green Legacy program that sets it apart from so many other things is its involvement with school children. You know, this is the week, this is one of the things I thought really timely this week with the student climate change, action on climate change coming up this week. One of the biggest components of the Green Legacy program is the involvement of students. It ties it back to the question I got in the first place. It started with the KELP program. The Green Legacy has fits directly into the curriculum here in our school board. So that when the kids are in kindergarten, the Green Legacy staff and volunteers go into the schools with the seeds, with the cells, the little pots, and the students, the kids all plant the seeds. And then in middle school, like when they get into grade 4, 5, and 6, they come back to the nursery, and those seedlings are now seedlings. What they planted are now seedlings. They get the chance to transplant those seedlings from the pots into the into the more permanent beds in the nursery. Wow. And then when they get to be grade 8, they get to actually take those trees and plant them in the ground.
All part of the program. Wow.
All part of the program, all through the schools. And this is from the south end of the county, from Pilsner's Township up to Wellington North, all the way up to Mount Forest, Drayton, Harrison, you name it, and all the schools, even the schools in Guelph participate, and the Guelph isn't part of the county, but that's where most, a lot of the kids go to school.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a way of connecting those urban kids to a rural program.
Yeah. That, what, and a lot of people you could roll into that too. Wow.
Well, and you, yeah. And you can imagine then how many of those kids are out asking people like me questions like I was asked 20 years ago.
Matthew, I have a couple of moments here, 2 minutes. Let's talk just a bit more about the environmental farm plan, because you thought some of the people out there might be interested in this program.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So that was one of the things that, you know, really helped me when I got it started farming, was the environmental farm plan. And what's interesting about that is that it helped me to identify where I could do better on the farm, where my farm could have a better impact, a positive impact. And then it opens the doors to funding. Here we have a program called the Rural Water Quality Program, where any farmer who's completed the environmental farm plan, identified projects to make the world better, whether it's where to plant buffers, moving fuel tanks, improving manure storage, all the things we want to do anyway to protect our own well. If we're doing those things to protect the urban wells around us, because let's face it, all the straws in the urban areas come into our community. City of Guelph has their drinking water. Their wells are in Postlethwaite Township. The city of Cambridge gets a lot of water from the township. Flamborough gets water from here. So people downstream of us benefit from the actions we take. And so the Rural Water Quality Program helps to, it's funded by the urban municipalities to help fund projects for farmers that have done the environmental farm plan. So it's another, it's a tie, another good connection in recognition that, you know, the farmers that steward the land in the rural areas, you know, they're servicing the urban society. You know, we're not disconnected. We have a connection.
It's amazing. And I just so love the fact of so much forward thinking that people are doing, constant keeping on it to make things better. What a wonderful program. Matthew, thank you. We've run out of time. I really appreciate you coming on and just having a chat about all this stuff on Voices.
Thank you so much. And great to meet Ramya. I've enjoyed the show very much since you joined, Kelly, several years ago. And always nice to have a listen to you when I have a chance in the afternoon.
Thanks, Matthew.
Appreciate you doing that, Matthew, and listening to the show. Folks, we're going to take a break in a sec. That was Matthew Vollmer from Puslinch. Let's see if I can say it right. Puslinch, I'll say that right. Township in Southern Ontario, to talk about the passion for climate awareness that he and so many others in the region have. We'll conclude Voices. We'll do this again next month. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up the program.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.